We're holding in Sukkah on page 88, the paragraph labeled Daf Chof Hei Amar Aleph, Ha'ozik Ba'ozik B'mitzvah. The Mishnah talks about the point that Shluchei Mitzvah are potter from sitting in the Sukkah, and the Gemara gets into a whole discussion about the concept of Osik B'mitzvah potter min ha-mitzvah, which the Gemara derives it to the it's not here in Ein Yaakov, but the Gemara before that, and also in Brachas, derives that concept from the fact that it says by Krishma that you have to do it to shiv to chav beisecha over lech to chav aderech, which the Gemara explains means when you're going belech to chav, when you're going on your own personal journey, then you're still chayiv in Krishma as opposed to when you're going on a journey for dvar mitzvah. So then the Gemara asks, and here's where we pick up in Ein Yaakov, the question is, v'oisik b'mitzvah potem and ha-mitzvah mechocha nafka? You're telling me that we learn it from there? Mehosam nafka. We have a whole different source for that concept that oisik b'mitzvah potem and ha-mitzvah. D'tanya, we learn in a braisa. The pasuk says, in connection with Pesach Sheni, so you have Moshe had told the Jewish people to bring the korban Pesach, and then Moshe had told the Jewish people to bring the korban Pesach that second year that they were in the Midbar. And then the pasuk says, "Vayhi anoshim asher hoyu tmeim lenefesh adam begomer." There were people who were tamei by human bodies, and therefore they couldn't bring the korban Pesach. And they came to Moshe and complained, "Lomani gora, why should we not be able to bring and eat the korban Pesach?" So the question is, page 88.
16.
Oh, see,
the numbers are mine.
So it's fine. It's here. It's page 68. It's labeled by you. Page 68. It's all signed as that. Fine. Okay. Right. Anyway, that's what it is. Okay. So Oisim Anoshim Mihoyu. Who were those people who were Tomei and they're coming to Moshe with the complaint? Now, the Ritva asks, what do you mean, who were those people? You have a nation of millions of people. You have 600,000 Jews from 20 to 60, besides the ones below that, besides the ones above that, besides the Levium, besides the women and children. In a nation that size, you don't expect that any day there's going to be some dead people and there's going to be some people who are telling me, what's the question even in the first place? So he explains, the Tzlach, actually, the No Debi Yehuda, gives an answer. We find that from the first census, from when they gave the Machzah Shekels right after Yom Kippur, when Moshe told them about the Mishkan, until the census in Parashas Bamidbar, which took place in Ir, nobody of those who were counted died during that time, and that's why the numbers were identical. So therefore, so we can assume that, yes, nobody Taka died during that time, and therefore the Gemara is wondering what's going on over here. But the Ritva himself gives a long answer, the gist of which is that what was the situation? The Gemara is going to point out that this was actually, Erev Pesach was actually the last day of their Truma. They were Tomei Mes, but today is the seventh day. All they need is to be sprinkled with Parah Aduma water, which had the Parah Aduma had first been prepared about 2 weeks earlier. Beis Nissen, the first one was prepared, and then they need Tevila, and that's that. So he explains Barichos that they're coming to Moshe with a taina lomani gora. What's the question in the first place? They don't realize that Tmeim can't eat korbanos. Moshe has already told them that concept. Rather, what it was is these guys were chachamim. They realized this concept. Today is our last day of Tuma. After all, yes, right now during the Shechita we're still Tomei, but by the time it comes to eating it, we're going to be Tahor. So therefore, so the Gemara is wondering, who are this caliber of people who have the breitkeit to come with such an argument? And where he goes on to explain, where on top of that, what seems to have happened is, he says, they kind of pushed off things. They figured, we don't have to be in any hurry to actually to get sprinkled and to tovel and make sure that we're tahor, because we still have time during the day, as long as we get it done before Erev Shemesh. And all of a sudden Moshe tells them, boom, you can't. You're going to have to be delayed to Pesach Sheni. So it takes a certain caliber of people to have that breakkeit to come to him and to realize that you know what, we don't have to be in such a rush. And therefore the Gemara is asking, who are those people? Because we're assuming it's not Stam run-of-the-mill people. That point, by the way, we're going to talk about soon, that it was Shvi Shalahem Lias Be'er Pesach, so we'll talk about soon what the implication of that is. Anyway, so who were these people? So Nose Aron Shal Yosef Hoyo Divir Abiyai Saglili. So Abiyai Saglili says they were the ones who were carrying Yosef's coffin. So of course they became Tomei, and now they need to know what to do. Rabbi Akiva, I mean, Mishal Vel Tzofon Hoyo. Rabbi Akiva says they were Mishal and Tzofon. Shal Yoskim Shasukim and Nodav Aviyu. They had been busy when Nodav and Aviyu passed away. The Pasuk says that Moshe called on them. They're Levium. So they're, if they become Tomei on that day of Chanukah Samishkan, it's not as big a deal. He told them to go carry out Nodav and Aviyu's bodies. So therefore, they became Tomei. Tosfos, by the way, points out, that there's an opinion. Now you have, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses two different opinions, what exactly happened to them. Is it, we know they were killed by a fire from Hashem. Is it that the fire only burnt out their insides and left their bodies intact? Well, then of course, they're metame, anybody who carries them, and that's how Mishal and Otsafin became tame. But you have a different opinion in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that says their bodies were burnt. So then in that case, what's there to be metame? Ashes of a dead person are not metame. And Tosfos answers, even according to that, their skeletons were still intact, and therefore that would have been metame, not Mishal and Otsafin, when they carried them. Rabbi Yitzchok, Tosfos also, a little further on, we talk about Shvi Shalahen Be'erev Pesach, Tosfos brings a girsa in Psachim, which we also find this opinion in the Sifri, and we also find it in, we also find it, Eben Ezra brings it on the Psukim in Parshas Pekudei. Like this, we always learn as kids that on the 23rd of Adar, Moshe started setting up the Mishkan, and then every day for the next 7 days, then you have the Shivas Yimei Amivorim, and every day he's setting up the Mishkan in the morning and then taking it down after the day's Avoda, and then Rosh Chodesh Nissan is Vayhi Bayim HaShemini, then he puts it up, and it stays up, and it stays up for good until they travel from Har Sinai. There is an opinion, though, that actually there's an opinion of Rabbi Akiva and Sifri, and then the Eben Ezra learns according to this also, that actually, no. So like this, what's it based on? The Pasuk in Parashas Pekudei says that Hashem says to Moshe, on Rosh Chodesh Nissan, you should set up the Mishkan. So usually we understand that means you should set it up and it will remain up. But again, this opinion of Rabbi Akiva and of the Eben Ezra, so according to that then, as the Gemara is going to ask, in that case, how could it be Mishal and Otsafon? In that case, they became Tomer to Shchodesh Nissen. From then until Yudal of Nissen, they have more than enough time to become Tahar. Rather, this other opinion says that no, the Shiva Simei Miluim began on Rosh Chodesh Nissen, according to that opinion. When Hashem tells Moshe, set up the Mishkan on Aleph Nissen, it means start setting it up for the first time. And then you have Aleph through Zion or the Shiva Simei Milurim, according to that. And then on Ches Nissen, then would be Yom HaShemini, and that's the day when Nadav and Avihu passed away, and therefore, so from Ches to Yudal, it is exactly 7 days, and that could explain how it's Mishal and Otsafon, because in fact, they became Tomei on Ches Nissen, carrying out, Nadav, according to that opinion, carrying out Nadav and Avihu's bodies, and Yudal of Nissen comes out to be the seventh day. Anyway, Rabbi Yitzchok disagrees with both of those opinions. And he says, look, if it was the ones who carried Yosef's coffin, they could have become Tahar long ago because the Jewish people camped by Har Sinai, Rosh Chodesh Sivan, then they received the Torah, and then they remained there for almost a year until Chof Iyar the following year. Now, when the Mishkan is being set up and when Moshe is telling them to bring a Korban Pesach that second year, they'd already been camped at Har Sinai for months. So they're not carrying Yosef's coffin anywhere. And the first Parah Adruma was prepared on Beis Nissen. Rashi brings from other Gemaras. So they had more than enough time to become Tahar. And if it was Mishal and Otsafon, also Yechol and Hoyu Tahar, they could also become Tahar for the same reason, because according to Rabbi Akiva's opinion, they wouldn't have had time because it took place Ches Nissen, but according to the mainstream opinion that it was Rosh Chodesh Nissen, so from Rosh Chodesh to Yadala, they have more than enough time to become Tahar. Rather, Rabbi Yitzchok learns, Oiskin and Mes Mitzvah Hoyu, they were people who were involved in burying a Mes Mitzvah. And Rashi says, we don't mean over here, when we say Mes Mitzvah, we don't mean the classic kind of Mes Mitzvah where there's nobody else around to bury. That kind, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Masechet Psachim, actually the mitzvah of doing that completely overrides the Korban Pesach. And it's not just a regular case of Oisik mitzvah, Potem and mitzvah. A person is on his way to bring the Korban Pesach, and he finds a Mes Mitzvah, he has to stop what he's doing and bury the Mes Mitzvah, even though he's going to be pushed off to Pesach Sheni because of that. Rather, Rashi explains, Mes Mitzvah over here means Poshet, a person's relative, one of his seven relatives, where there's a mitzvah in the Torah for him to be involved in the burial of it. Anyway, so he says, so they were involved with a Mes Mitzvah, Shechal Shvi Shalahem Lius Be'erev Pesach. The seventh day of their Tumah came out on Erev Pesach. Now, on the face of it, what's the problem? All they have to do is they've sprinkled the Parah Adruma water that day. They tovel. They need head of Shemesh. Fine, at the time of the Shechita, they're Tomei. They'd have to send the Korban with somebody else. But by the time it comes to eating it, they'd be Tahar. What's the problem? Rashi refers over here to a Gemara in Psachim where there's a machlokas on the question. Forget about a Tomei mess for a second. Suppose, for example, a person became Tomei by a Sheretz, where he's only Tomei for that day. He doesn't need pour out a drum of water or anything. All he needs is tevila and Erev Shemesh. So the fact is, Erev Pesach afternoon, he's going to be tameh, but by the time it comes to Pesach night, he'll be tohur. Can you shech the Korban Pesach, having him in mind? This is machlokas in the Gemara in Pesachim. So Rashi explains, Rabbi Yitzchok is following the opinion that you cannot do that. Therefore, these people are in effect in the same situation. Yes, they're going to be tohur tonight, but the fact is, today they're tameh. Tosfos discusses that over here and in Pesachim, and says maybe not necessarily. Another possible way of learning it is similar to what we said from the Ritva, is yes, if they tovel, if they get sprinkled and they tovel in time, they will be tahor to eat that night. But they were saying, what happens if we don't? What happens if we don't have enough time to accomplish that? Can the Korban Pesach still be brought for us? And the answer is no, you have to be pushed off the Pesach Sheni. And then the Rambam has yet a third shita in it. He says, yes, by a Tmei Sheretz, you could do that. However, a Tomei Mess is a special situation. When in his seventh day, if it comes out on Erev Pesach, he cannot have the Korban Pesach brought on his behalf. He's pushed off to Pesach Sheni only if his seventh day came out on the 13th of Nisan, and then he's sprinkled for the last time then, and then he tovels that night. Then yes, he's completely tohur the next day. Then they can shech the Korban Pesach for him. So and he taka learns that from this Gemara and the parallel Gemaras in Pesachim and in other places, because we see that's Rabbi Yitzchok is saying that was exactly the situation. Anyway, Shenema, because the Pasuk says, "V'lo yochlu lasis Pesach b'yomahu," the Pasuk says they couldn't bring the Korban Pesach on that day, implying, why does it have to say b'yomahu? When else do you bring the Korban Pesach? B'yomahu, eni mecholim lasis. It means they weren't able to that day because their seventh day of Tumah. Holomocho, yecholim lasis. If Pesach had been a day later, they would have been able to bring it. So therefore, that's where Rabbi Yitzchok says, we see that it was their seventh day. The point is, the Gemara says, so you see from that you have a concept of Oisik B'mitzvah, Potem and HaMitzvah, because they're involved in burying the Mess Mitzvah, or according to the other opinions, they're involved in taking care of Nadav and Avihu's bodies or of Yosef's coffin, and we're saying that overrides their mitzvah to bring the Korban Pesach. So why do we need to learn it from Lelech Tocha B'Derech? And the Gemara goes on to distinguish between whether you're chayiv in the mitzvah right now versus you're talking about something where if you do something now, then later on, you're not going to be able to do the mitzvah like is the case over here. When we talk about Shluchah Mitzvah, Peturim and Asukah, and from other mitzvahs, we mean even if right now you're already obligated in the mitzvah, and the question is you have another mitzvah that's claiming your attention, should you be doing that even though it means you're not going to be able to do the other mitzvah? The Gemara continues. The Mishnah had said, "Piska oichlam achilas arai chutz la sukkah." You're allowed to eat an achilas arai. You're allowed to eat like a snack outside the sukkah. So, kama achilas arai. What is the definition? How much food is considered achilas arai? Amar Rabbi Yosef tauti a klas bay, two or three eggs. Now, Rashi actually explains that Rashi does not have the word bay, and it just means two or three little bits of food. Rashi uses the word morsels, like in English, also means like little amounts of food. Tosfos points out that actually, since the Gemara elsewhere mentions that a person can swallow one kibetza at a time, a person can swallow an entire egg at a time, that is why the halacha, that is why the shear of eating from many areas in halacha is considered a kibetza, then therefore it amounts to the same thing. Whether you have the word bay in the Gemara or not, it means, in other words, that Rabbi Yosef is saying you would be allowed to eat two or three eggs worth of bread even outside the sukkah, and that would still be considered achilas arai. However, what do you mean? Two or three eggs worth of food, especially if it's bread, sometimes that's quite enough for a person. Then it's really a fixed meal. Why should he not have to eat that in a sukkah? Rather, Abaye says, it would be the amount that a young Talmud Chacham eats before he's going to the Beis Medrash. So Rashi points out, in other words, he's going to the Beis Medrash. He doesn't know how long the shiur is going to last, how long the learning is going to last. So he eats something to hold him in the morning before he goes. And therefore, that would be the amount that's considered achivas arai, and you can eat that outside the sukkah. The poskim say that's approximately a beitza. So therefore, yes, a person technically can eat up to a kibetza of bread outside the sukkah and not have to. More kibetza or more you have to eat in the sukkah. Of course, our minhag is that we eat and drink everything in the sukkah, which the Gemara also deals with that, and it mentions that Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yechim ben Zakkai were machmer on themselves, and it's poor, and a person can be machmer on themselves, and it's not considered yuara, etc. Then the Gemara continues, Tonan Abanan, Oichlan Achilas Arai Chutz L'Sukkah. Now you are allowed, as we said, to eat a snack outside the sukkah, However, you're not even allowed to take a nap outside the sukkah. My timer, so why not? Because he might fall asleep. And the actual falling asleep, that would be Shenas Keva. That definitely has to be done in the sukkah. Of course, on Minhag, because we don't sleep in the sukkah. There's the famous Sicha in Chelek Chavtes, where the Rebbe analyzes that in great detail, why that's so, how it is that the halacha, that you have to sleep in the sukkah, doesn't conflict with what we learned from the Rebbeim, that you can't sleep in the sukkah because of the Kedusha in it. And the Rebbe makes a whole point over there that it's not so much that to be Mekayim, the mitzvah of sukkah, you have to sleep in the sukkah. It's rather just as the Gemara is saying over here, you're not allowed to sleep outside it. However, we find, for example, later on in the Masechta, Rabbi Yeshua mentions that during the time of the Beis Mikdash, all they could do is like take brief naps on each other's shoulders, because between davening and learning and the avodah and Simchas Beis Hasheva, they had no time to sleep during sukkahs. And we see from that that a brief nap like that outside the sukkah is not impinging on keeping the mitzvah of sukkah. With that said, I've heard it said that the Rebbe barely slept during all of sukkahs in order not to have that issue, because after all, black letter halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that you're supposed to sleep in the sukkah. But on the other hand, if we're going to say that you can't sleep in the sukkah, so the Rebbe would kind of, I've heard, I don't know if it's Oiskalton, that the Rebbe would barely sleep during the whole 8 days of sukkahs because of that. Yeah. Anyway. So Omale Abaya. So Abaya asks Rav Ashi. Now, an interesting point in that is, did Rav Abaya and Rav Ashi ever see each other? Now you have, there is a Gemara in Kiddushin that says when Rava passed away, Rav Ashi was born. So in that case, then, since Abaya passed away even before Rava outlived him by 14 years, then it would have been impossible for him to see Abaya, in which case Yad Yosef over here brings, in the Masoros HaShas, in the printed Gemara, also brings that this may be someone called Rav Ashi HaKadma. And here and there in the Gemara, we find references to Rav Ashi. The famous Rav Ashi was one of the last Amoraim, but it seems there was another namesake of his who lived in an earlier generation, and that would be the one that Abaya is speaking with over here. With that said, when we say that Abaya was born when Rava passed away, doesn't necessarily mean on the day Rava passed away. We actually have Gemaras where Rava and Rav Ashi are talking to one another, so it's possible that the Gemara just means that Rav Ashi was born sometime before Rava passed away, and he was old enough to at least be a junior Talmud. In that case, it's barely possible that Abaya saw him. The other possibility is that maybe the Gersa over here is not Rav Ashi, but rather there are Gersois that it's Rav Yosef, and of course Abaya was a Talmud of Rav Yosef, so it's quite natural enough that he would ask him. Anyway, so Abaya asks him, Elohod the Tanya, what about, we learn in a Braisa, Yoshin Odom Shenas Arai B'Tfilin, a person is allowed to take a nap while wearing Tfilin, Avalo Shenas Keva, but he's not allowed to take, he's not allowed to actually sleep in Tfilin because of a concern that he may pass gas. Shouldn't you say the same thing? You shouldn't sleep Shenas Arai while wearing tefillin because you might fall completely asleep. So why by sukkah are we saying that you can't do one because it might lead to the other, but by tefillin, we're not concerned about that? The answer is Amar Rav Yosef, Breder Rabbi Loi, B'moisur Shenosi L'Acherim. Because with the din of tefillin, you're talking about where he gives the responsibility for his sleep to others. In other words, he says, I'm going to take a nap. I'm leaving it up to you. Please wake me up before I fall completely asleep. Maska for a Masharshia. So the Masharshia says, how would that work? Because the expression goes, Arvach Arvatsarech, your Orev needs an Orev himself. Who's to say that he himself is that the other guy you're relying on is not going to fall asleep? Ela Omer Rav Babachon, Omer Bechanan, B'maniach Roshe Ben Birka Vaskinan. What we're talking about is what would be allowed for a person to sleep in tefillin would be where he's putting his head between his knees. So like he puts his arms down on his knees and rests his head on that. That's not the kind of thing that a person is really going to fall asleep. That's the kind of thing a person may nap for a few seconds or a few minutes in that. And that short amount of time, we're not concerned that he's going to pass gas, and therefore it's not such a problem in tefillin. Rava Omer, Ein Keva L'Shena. Rava gives a different answer, that there's no fixed thing for Shena, meaning, in other words, Rava is saying there is actually no difference between a nap and deep sleep. Sometimes a person just needs a power nap, like a person just naps for a couple of minutes and already he's refreshed and now he can get by without sleep for a while. So with tefillin, So with tefillin, when it's a short amount of time, we're not concerned that he's going to that he's going to pass gas. But by sukkah, it's not so much that you're not so much like we said before that you can't take a nap because you might come to fall asleep altogether, but because the nap itself is considered like a full sleep, and therefore that itself would be also outside the sukkah. Even as far as tefillin, by the way, the poskim mentioned this discussion. Lamaskana. In principle, you might be allowed to take a short nap in tefillin, but based on what we're saying over here, that a person might fall asleep, then it's not so simple. So with maniach rosh ben birkov, it might be allowed, but even that, the Gemara goes on to define the maximum time would be the amount of time it takes to walk 100 amos. Not so much because it's not a cover dick, but because you might pass gas while you're wearing the tefillin. Now, Tosfos elsewhere deals with the point, by the way. The fact is, the Gemara tells us in a number of places, you're not allowed to be Masiach Das while you wear tefillin. You have to be focused on them. Well, there shouldn't that be a problem alone to not sleep in tefillin, because then you're not focused on them. So Tosfos discusses in a number of places that when we say that you can't be Masiach Das, means you can't be frivolous. You can't be like silly and joking and whatever in tefillin. You have to be in a serious frame of mind, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't be thinking about anything else. I mean, for example, in those times when people wore tefillin all day long, they're wearing it while they're doing their business. They're wearing it while they're whatever, and that's not considered that's a problem of Hesach Hadas. So by the same token, a nap is not in and of itself a problem of Hesach Hadas, but there is the problem that he might pass gas, and therefore we're saying too long is no good. So the Gemara goes on to discuss that the maximum would be the time it takes to walk 100 amos, which the Magen Avraham calculates at 18 minutes to a mil, 18 minutes that it takes to walk a mil, and 2,000 amos to the mil, then it comes out 100 amos would be 54 seconds. That's so in principle, No, it's not nothing to do with tumah, because you might have to wash your hands. That would only be for a much longer amount of sleep, 3 minutes in some, according to some poskim, 30 minutes according to others, 60 minutes according to others. But with tefillin, the problem is that he might pass gas. So again, the Gemara ends up saying that if it's a brief nap of 100 amos or less, it's not a problem. But the poskim discuss, is that in fact so? Or maybe is it only, maybe in practice we shouldn't do that because the fact is he might fall asleep more? Or is it maybe that you need both? It needs to be Rosh Ben Birkov. It has to be his head on his knees, and a maximum of 100 amos. Further on, the Mishnah talks about that Rebbe Eliezer holds like this. First, the Gemara says that Rebbe Eliezer holds that you have to eat two meals a day during each of the 7 days of Sukkot. You have to eat two meals a day in the Sukkot. So according to him, you have to eat full 14 meals in the Sukkah, whereas the Chachamim say that no, you only have to eat the first night in the Sukkah. After that, if you want to just live off fruit or whatever, and technically fruit you could eat outside the Sukkah, then you're not actually obligated to. Then Rabbi Eliezer continues in the Mishnah, and the Gemara explains that he changed his mind from his earlier opinion. He says if a person didn't eat the full 14 meals in the Sukkah, then he makes it up on Shmini Atzeres. And the Chum say, no, Ein L'Dover Tashlumin, there's no making anything up. So now, in this connection, when Rabbi Eliezer had said in his first opinion that you have to eat two meals a day in the Sukkah, then you have this piece of eat. Shal apotropos shal agripa samelachas Rabbi Eliezer. The apotropos, which is the steward or the caretaker of Agrippas HaMelech's estate. There were two Agrippas HaMelech's. There was a father and a son. The father ruled about 30 years before the Churban. But Pashtos, that's not the one we're dealing with over here, because Rabbi Eliezer would have been fairly young at the time. The second one ruled closer to the Churban. That may be the one we're talking about over here, but it's also possible that this guy is not the overseer of the estate anymore. Maybe by this time Agrippas had died or whatever, but he's still known by that title that he used to have. Anyway, so all over Shas, when you have Agrippas HaMelech, different historians discuss which Agrippas was it, the first or the second. Rashi in some places mentions it's the one in whose time the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, which would imply that it's the second one, but there's a lot of discussion about it. Anyway, so this apotropos, so it was a yid, asks Rabbi Eliezer, "Kegoyin ani," he says, "consider my situation, she'eni rogel lechel al suda achas bayoyim. I usually only eat one full meal a day with bread. Now I know you're saying, Rabbi Eliezer, that a person has to eat two meals a day in the sukkah in order to be yotze, but that's for a regular person who eats two meals a day. Me, I only eat one meal a day. Can I be yotze with only the one meal?" Amalei. So Rabbi Eliezer answers him, listen, it's true you only have one meal, one full meal, but every day before that one meal of yours, you have all kinds of delicacies and all kinds of hors d'oeuvres and things that you eat before the meal in order to stimulate your appetite for your own covered. So this way, when it comes to your meal, you'll be able to eat with an appetite. The achshav, so now during Sukkos, can't you have one of those hors d'oeuvres in honor of the one who created you, of Hashem? In other words, like this, fine. Every other day, what you do is you have a lot of appetizers and things, and then you have your one major meal of the day. So now what you do is some other time of the day, have some of those other appetizers, and then so it will stimulate your appetite to have a second meal during Sukkos. Okay. Halacha l'maaseh is not like Rabbi Eliezer in either of those things. The halacha l'maaseh is that only the first night is a bread, and the second night in Chutz La'aretz is a person required to eat a kazayas of bread in the sukkah. And then you have the dinim order if it's raining, etc. The rest of the days, in principle, given that strict halacha is, you are allowed to eat outside the sukkah. We said before, you can even eat up to a kavetza of bread outside the sukkah. You can eat fruit and then meat and other kinds of things like that outside the sukkah. Technically, then a person could just go into the sukkah the first night, eat his kazayas of bread, kavetza, whatever, and then the rest of sukkahs, he could live off other things, or even just eat less than a kavetza at a time, and never have to be in the sukkah. He is yotze that way. And as far as the second din, there's no making up. If a person missed eating in the sukkah the first night, there's no tashlumin for it, just like there's no tashlumin for other mitzvahs as shazman grama. Okay. Then the Gemara goes on to discuss another concept that Rabbi Eliezer says, the Gemara discusses in some detail, that Rabbi Eliezer holds that you have to have, it's your own sukkah. You can't be yotze in somebody else's sukkah. And also that you have to be in the same sukkah throughout sukkahs. So he holds that, among other things, it would mean Rabbi Eliezer says, the Gemara explains that Rabbi Eliezer would say you can't build a sukkah during sukkahs. Again, the halacha is not like that. You can build a sukkah during Chol HaMoed. All the pop-up sukkahs, when you think of it, are exactly that. Anyway. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, Maisa b'Rabbi Loi, Shaholach l'hakbil, Pnei Rabbi Eliezer Rabbe b'Rego b'Lud. It happened that Rabbi Loi, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer, he went to greet his Rebbe, Rebbe Eliezer, and on the Yom Tov in Lud. Lud was the city in Eretz Yisrael where Rebbe Eliezer lived. He was the head of the local Beis Din over there. So now, one Yom Tov, Rabbi Loi came to Lud before Yom Tov, and he was staying over the first day of Yom Tov in Lud. Omalei, so Rabbi Eliezer tells him, Eloi, aren't you one of those people? Aren't you one of the people who keep Yom Tov? Now, what do you mean? How is he not keeping Yom Tov? Rabbi Eliezer says, I praise the lazy people who don't leave their houses during the Yom Tov. During Yom Tov, Rabbi Eliezer holds a person needs to be at home with his family. So a person may stay home not because he wants to be yotze the mitzvah, but just because he's lazy. But nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer says that's a good kind of laziness. He's keeping the mitzvah properly. Again, the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer in that. Anyway, the pasuk says you should rejoice on your Yom Tov with your family. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer means that means that the entire Yom Tov you need to stay at home. So Rashi points out, as far as that's Slonim, you have people who never leave their house, who never leave their city, not because of any mitzvah, but because they're lazy and they don't feel like traveling. So fine, the rest of the year, that's not such a good thing. But on Yom Tov, Rabbi Eliezer is saying they're doing a good thing by that. Anyway, so therefore, he's telling Rabbi Loi, so why did you leave your family in order to come here to Lud for Yom Tov? So the Gemara asks, Eini, is that so? You're supposed to stay at home the entire Yom Tov? How do we know that a person is obligated to greet his Rebbe on Yom Tov? Shenema, we find by the story of the Isha Ashunamis, it's the Haftorah of Parshas Vayera. So she's in a hurry to go to the Navi after what happened to her son. So her husband says to her, Madua, he doesn't know what happened yet. So he asks her, he knows the boy was sick. and he sent him home, but he doesn't know that the boy had passed away. So he asks him, Madua ate leches elav, why are you going to him, to Elisha, hayoim today? Loich chodesh v'le Shabbos, it's not Rosh Chodesh and it's not Shabbos. In other words, if it was Rosh Chodesh or Shabbos, you would expect her to be going to visit the Navi to learn from him. Miklal de b'chodesh v'Shabbos, v'chayivon, v'haku p'nei rabbi. You see from that on Rosh Chodesh and on Shabbos, a person is obligated to greet his Rebbe. And now there's a lot of discussion among different mefoshim. Given that the pasuk is mentioning chodesh and Shabbos, why is Rabbi Yitzchok referring to regel? Why is he referring to the Yom Tov? So Marsha points out that obviously a regel is no less important than Rosh Chodesh. If the husband of the Isha Ashunamis expects that she's going to go to visit Elisha on Shabbos and on Rosh Chodesh, how much more so on Rosh Chodesh? How much more so on Yom Tov? Different mefoshim deal with different angles on it exactly. Among others, the Gemara is going to make the distinction over here whether it's talking about within the tchum or not. And the Ritva points out that's the point. If you're within the tchum, then you should be visiting your Rebbe on Shabbos and Yom Tov as well. If you're outside the tchum, and in this case, the Isha Shunamis was going all the way from her house in Shunem until Har HaKamel, which is well outside of tchum, then at least she should be going there on Rosh Chodesh. But so when he says "beregel," he means, in other words, if you're within the tchum and you'll be able to get there. And then the Rif and Iyun Yaakov and Eitz Yosef all deal with different angles on exactly what it is. Among other things, that the rest of the week he could tell her, listen, you know, you have things to do around the house. Don't go leaving to go visit the Navi when there are things to do. But since we see that on Chodesh and Shabbos she's supposed to go, then again we can understand how much more so on Yom Tov, which is less frequent. Another point is also, of course, we know that Yom Tov is sometimes called Shabbos, like Mimachras Shabbos. So there's different points of why Rabbi Yitzchok is mentioning Regel when in fact the Pasuk is mentioning Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh. The Noda Behuda, by the way, has a tshuva on this subject. He mentions that maybe this whole chiyuv only applies bizman shebeis mikdash kayim, the same way as you had a mitzvah of aliyah l'regel. If you're not able to be aliyah l'regel for whatever reason, then you have a mitzvah to greet your rebbe. Maybe nowadays that doesn't necessarily apply. Anyway, the point is that so we see there is a mitzvah to do that. So why is Rabbi Eliezer upset with Rabbi Loi for coming to greet him? And the answer is like Kasha, hold the ozel for osi b'yoyme. It depends whether we can go and come back on the same day. So if Rabbi Loi was living in Lod or near enough to it that it's within a tchum, or he could put down an air of tchum or whatever, and be able to walk to Lod to see Rabbi Eliezer and then go home and spend Yom Tov with it, and then spend the rest of Yom Tov with his family, then good. But if he can't come on that day, then Rabbi Eliezer is saying you shouldn't have done that in the first place because Yom Tov, you belong with your family. You have to be makbel pnei rabbi. So either live close enough to your rebbe, or if you can't, then don't visit him on regel, then visit him on Rosh Chodesh. So more on Rabbi Eliezer and what he holds as far as dinim about sukkahs. Tanan abanan ma'aseh Rabbi Eliezer sheshav. The Gemara is just quoting the words v'samachta b'chagecha, but it means the rest of the pasuk. Yeah. In fact, the printed Gemara has a different girsa that quotes a different pasuk. V'samachta b'chol atoiv, I think, or I don't remember the exact pasuk, which is actually in context is referring to ma'aseh sheni. But again, you know, it's the same idea that it's meant to be together with your family. It happened once that Rabbi Eliezer was staying over. Shavas means he was spending Shabbos, so Yom Tov, Begolil HaElyon, in the upper Galil, which means the mountainous areas of the Galil. You have the Galil, the north of Eretz Yisrael, can be divided into you have the lower areas, like the area near Tveria and whatever, and then you have the higher, the more mountainous areas, like Tzfas and Meron, and so on and so forth. Anyway, so he was in the Galil HaElyon. B'sukoseh, Sherab Yechan and Ben Rabbi Loi, in the sukkah of Rabbi Yechan and the son of Rabbi Loi, maybe this is the same Rabbi Loi as before, maybe it's a different one. Anyway, B'Kesari, in the city of Kesari and in the Galil, B'Amila B'Kesari, and others say in the city of Kesari. Further on, the Gemara asks, actually, We don't have it here in Ein Yaakov, but the Gemara further on asks, wait, didn't we just say that Rabbi Eliezer says that Yom Tov you're supposed to be spending with your family? So now what is he doing being a guest by Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Loi? And the Gemara ends up answering, it wasn't a Yom Tov, it was a regular Shabbos some other time during the year. Anyway, so he giach hamal sukkasa. So now the sun was reaching the sukkah. Again, the Gemara assumes to begin with that we're talking about that this was taking place during the Yom Tov of Sukkot, and he's sitting in the sukkah. Because of that, the Gemara ends up saying it was a regular Shabbos during the year, and they're not sitting in the sukkah for the mitzvah, but rather just because it was a cool, shady place. Anyway, Omer Leh, so Rabbi Yochanan asks Rabbi Yezer, Rebbe, mahu she'efres alei asodin? Am I allowed to spread out a sheet over the sukkah? Now again, if we assume to begin with that this was on sukkahs, as the Gemara starts with the assumption, then what's the question? We know you can't put a sukkah, a sheet on top of your schach, you would passel it. Tosfos Uli or the Masechta discusses that maybe that would only be an issue. Maybe there's an issue putting a sheet only if you're doing it, because without that sheet, the schach will dry up and then you won't have schach. So you're doing it basically in order to protect the schach. Without that sheet, you wouldn't have schach. Maybe that would passel the sukkah. Maybe just putting up a sheet because you're uncomfortable because of the heat is maybe not an issue. Other Rishonim disagree with that, and they say, since the Gemara ends up concluding again that the question was not so much as far as the halachas of sukkah, but rather as far as the halachas of Shabbos, whether it would be considered adding to an oihel like this. You're not allowed to make an oihel, a tent, on Shabbos. So are you allowed to be moisif al oihel arai? Are you allowed to add? You have an existing temporary year roof. Are you allowed to add to it? An example of that kind of thing you have nowadays is, let's say you have, for example, on Yom Tov, when you're taking out a baby stroller, you can't open up the canopy if it was closed before Yom Tov, but if the canopy was opened up at least a tefach, and the part where it's crimped up, where it's on the side of it, there doesn't count towards the tefach, but if you have it actually extended out at least a tefach, then you're allowed to further extend it out. The Gemara discusses further in the sugya that's what the Chachamim hold. But the question was, on Shabbos it's not an issue because you can't use a baby carriage anyhow unless you're in a place with an Eruv, but yeah, the same principle would apply on Shabbos. If you're in a place with an Eruv, you have that on Shabbos. If you're talking about a place without an Eruv, then it's relevant on Yom Tov. So if you have the canopy is extended out at least one tefach before Shabbos, then you're allowed to fully extend it on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. So you have to open it at least a tefach before, yeah. That's called to add, the same thing. That's called to add to oil. That's called adding to an oil arai. It's called adding to a temporary oil, and you're allowed to do that on Shabbos, provided it was at least a tefach open before Shabbos. Actually, closing is a different thing. We're not getting into that right now. But anyway, so Rabbi Eliezer, so the question is, does Rabbi Eliezer hold the same thing? Anyway, instead of answering straight out, because as the Gemara points out further on, Rabbi Eliezer never wanted to, and we learned this in Yuma as well, Rabbi Eliezer never wanted to answer anything that he hadn't explicitly learned from his Rebbeim, so instead he kind of diverted the discussion to another topic. Now, we talked about in Yuma, what does that mean? We have dinim that Rabbi Eliezer says, we have dinim and svaris that Rabbi Eliezer says all over Shas, and he never has a problem not saying, he never has a problem saying something that's his own opinion. So there's a few different possibilities. We talked about then, maybe this was only while his Rebbeim were alive. After they passed away, then he'd be more free to state his own opinion. Maybe Marsha points out in Brachas, maybe it depends whether we're talking about a matter of svara or not. When it's a matter that you can arrive at by svara, then sure, Rabbi Eliezer is going to give his own svara. When it's a matter that you need Kabbalah, that you need to have learned from your Rebbe, clearly whether this is allowed or not allowed, then unless he had explicitly heard it from his Rebbe, he wasn't going to say it. And then we talked about also the possibility that maybe Rebbe Eliezer's special thing was, we find all over Shas that the Gemara will regularly attribute certain words or a certain statement to a Tana or an Amora, where he never actually said it in so many words, but he said something from which we can infer that point. And most of the time, it's a valid inference, but Rabbi Eliezer wouldn't do that only if he heard it befeirush. Would he say it? He's not going to infer one thing from another. Anyway, he didn't want to say the answer befeirush, so Amalei, so instead, he answers with kind of a diversion, there's not a single shevet among the Jewish people from which a shofet did not come. You have the shoftim, who are described in Sefer Shoftim. So Rashi points out, you can go through them and you can find almost all the shvatim are represented. And most of the shoftim, we know which shevet they came from. And Rashi goes through the list. You have Reuven, Rashi says we don't specifically find. Shimon, we don't specifically find. But from Levi, you have Eli. from Yehuda, you have a couple. From Yehuda, you have Boaz. From Yisachar, you have Tola. From Zvulon, you have Eloin Hazvuloni. From Don, you have Shimshin. From Naphtali, you have Barak. God and Osher, Rashi says, we don't find explicitly. From Yosef, we have both from Manasseh and Ephraim. We have Yeshua from Ephraim, and we have Gideon from Manasseh, and we have Gideon from Manasseh. And Binyamin, we have and Binyamin, we have who did he say is from Binyamin is Ehud ben Gera. So most of the Shvatim are covered. There are, Rashi points out, there are a few Shoftim, we don't know what Shevet they come from. Different Achronim suggest possibilities based on where they came from, what Shevet they were from. But anyway, the point is that every Shevet produced Shoftim. So we'll have to continue with this tomorrow because we're out of time. But there is actually a Yalkut Shimoni that says on this a little differently, that says every Shevet except Shimon produced a Shoftim. Why Shimon? Because of the whole thing with the znus in Shittim over there with Baal Per. For that, they lost the schus to have any shofet come from.
But he never gave an answer.
So he didn't give an answer. That's what we'll continue talking about next time. Baz Hashem, why he didn't want to give them a straight answer. We'll also talk about Baz Hashem, what Mephoshim say, that nevertheless he's kind of hinting an answer within. He's not stam saying a random point. So we'll take that up to next time.
Baz Hashem, I read all the way. It says that,
but... Yeah. Okay. The Nosi Adur is Mashiach. So that starts with you have the simple meaning of Mashiach means anointed. But the Rebbe says, I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to argue if people understand Mashiach in the simple sense, meaning Mashiach Tzidkenu, because the truth is that the Nosi Adur is the Mashiach Shabadur. You have people who argue that that kind of style and those kinds of titles are higher than anybody can grasp. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have no nafka minna if you can grasp it or not. We don't have time for it to be grasped. The Rebbe is saying this is how it is. We do need to make sure that the result of it is not digging tunnels in 770 now. Yeah. Okay. Halacha. We were talking about the Sholosh Sudas. You have to have two full loaves of bread by each Suda. Sholosh Sudas. We talked about last time that maybe not necessarily because there are minigas anyway. We don't even eat bread, so you hold both of them during Hamotzi and you cut one of them. You make a little mark on the bread before you cut it. The basic reason, he says, is because on weekday, really, you should have to cut all around before you make the bracha hamotzi, and then you cut a ring on weekdays, and then that way, as soon as you make the bracha hamotzi, you're able to take a piece and eat it. Shabbos, you can't do that because you have to have whole breads. So at least you make a mark over there so you know where to cut, and this way you don't have to have as much of a hefsek after the bracha hamotzi. Yeah.